Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, the major political parties try to drum up enthusiasm ahead of next month's runoffs. The Fulton County Jail will stop accepting most misdemeanor arrestees. And as the summer warms up, environmental justice advocates want better heat protections.
Be intentional and understanding the importance of preserving the tree canopy, planting new trees, reducing carbon emissions and other pollutants, and supporting environmental justice work.
Today is Wednesday, May 27th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Georgia Republicans and Democrats are gearing up for a June 16th primary election runoff to determine the ballot for November's general elections, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Georgia Republican Party Chairman Josh McCoon says the Republican Party will continue to engage voters through a texting campaign started during the primary. The Republican gubernatorial and Senate races will be on the runoff ballot.
We definitely want our people to vote. We want them engaged in the process, and we'll be looking to do that again ahead of the runoff election.
Georgia Democratic Party Chairman Charlie Bailey says while they have candidates in the runoff, their focus is now on the general election, and volunteers are already talking to voters about November.
Where we are unified and determined at the top of the ticket, they are engaged in massive infighting for the next 3 weeks.
Both parties say they expect lower turnout for the runoff, but are hopeful about voter enthusiasm headed into the general election. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
The Fulton County Jail will stop accepting most misdemeanor arrestees starting July 1st. Fulton County Sheriff Pat Labatt says the move comes as county leaders continue dealing with overcrowding and worsening conditions at the Rice Street Jail. The facility remains under federal oversight efforts tied to a consent decree. Exceptions will include domestic violence, sexual assault, and some aggravated misdemeanor cases. Officials say they'll hold community meetings before the new policy takes effect. Environmental justice advocates spoke outside Atlanta City Hall today to demand stronger heat safety protections as temperatures rise and summer approaches. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more.
Organizers with Poder Latinx are raising the alarm about Black and Latino neighborhoods facing more dangerously hot days. Urban areas with less tree canopy and more pavement face greater health risks and energy costs. State Representative Jasmine Clark says elected officials on all levels need to consider climate change when making policy decisions.
Be intentional and understanding the importance of preserving the tree canopy, planting new trees, reducing carbon emissions and other pollutants, and supporting environmental justice work.
The Georgia Environmental Protection Division recognized April, May, and June of 2025 as the second hottest on record for that three-month period. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
The Chattahoochee Riverkeeper has filed a federal lawsuit against the owner and developer of an apartment complex in Columbus. The lawsuit, filed last week against the complex, Aspire at Old Guard, and its Alabama-based developer, alleges ongoing violations of the Clean Water Act. It says the companies failed to follow regulations intended to protect waterways from muddy stormwaters during construction. Messages were left yesterday for the named defendants and the Columbus government. The Northeast Georgia city of Maysville has canceled a meeting that would have served as an information session for a planned data center. The Maysville City Council says the meeting that had been scheduled for June 1st is canceled because most city representatives aren't available to attend. In a statement, the city also says it's not authorized to hold more public hearings for projects that have been approved. The city council approved permits for two data center buildings in January 2025 to be built by Northern Data Group, totaling 250,000 square feet. Several residents expressed concerns about the data center at a meeting last week and complained of a lack of notice to the city's residents before it was approved. City representatives have not responded to GPB's request for an interview. While next week's meeting on the data center is canceled, a session scheduled for tomorrow at the city's fire department will provide concerned citizens a chance to speak. During the American Civil War, nearly 13,000 Union soldiers died and were buried in Andersonville Prison in Georgia's Sumter County. Today, the former prison is now the home of Andersonville National Cemetery, where veterans of every American war except the War of 1812 are buried. Kevin Fry worked as a volunteer there for 16 years. During that time, he photographed and cataloged on findagrave.com thousands of graves, and he now runs an active Facebook community where he connects relatives of the deceased to records of their service and burial. Recently, I met with Fry at Andersonville National Cemetery to talk about his work. Kevin Fry, thank you so much for meeting me here at Andersonville National Cemetery.
It's my pleasure to meet you here and try to share the story. That's what my life's goal is.
You took the time to photograph more than 14,000 headstones here, 13,000 of which were people who died at Andersonville Prison during the Civil War.
Correct.
Tell me about that effort. What was it like for you to do those one by one?
Just obsession. You know, we're only here for a short time. And for so many of us, a headstone is all that's left behind. There's two quotes that really push me to do what I do that I like to refer to. One of them is, a man dies once his name is no longer spoken. And then the one is on the back of the Wisconsin Monument here. To live in hearts we leave behind is not to die. And that's just been with me. Looking around here, you've got 20,000 headstones, and it's a sea of stones, but each one has a story.
I'm wondering if in the course of your photographing and learning about each of these headstones, a story stands out to you.
Over here in the trench graves of the prisoner graves, there's several sets of brothers here. There's one set of three brothers. Certain ones like that connect with me. I have two brothers. I lost one 2 years ago.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you. But I often try to put myself into their situation and visualize what they went through and whatnot. I can't imagine being here with both of my brothers and just standing by with nothing that I could do to help save, and then, you know, two of them, as in cases of some of the pairs, and then the three, to have them perish.
The trench graves, you say, are off to our right from where,
yeah,
we're standing?
We can walk over to where we'll see a good section of this over here by this tree in the distance. It's a short walk. You'll see that all these are, the headstones are side by side, and they're not symbolic. These are where the burial trenches were done, and they were placed shoulder to shoulder. Trying to grasp this, you can see the newer stones off in the distance. But you can see where this row ends. All the way to the front, this is just 5,500 of those that died here. And throughout the rest of the cemetery, there's five other sections, which contain about 7,000 graves.
On Facebook, you run a group where people who have connections to people who are buried here are seeking information. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a story about someone looking for information that you were able to help.
The one that sticks out to me the most, which we can walk down here if you like, it's not too far across here. There were two brothers, three brothers with the last name of Tuttle. This is one that I think carries the most emotional weight on me. There was David Tuttle, there was Lauren Tuttle, and then there was Lewis Tuttle. Lauren was shot through the shoulder at Petersburg, and he was sent home unable to fight. His two brothers were captured outside of Petersburg and brought here in the summer of 1864. Lewis Tuttle died in November of 64. His brother died 3 weeks later in December. And if we'll turn here, you'll see what the most interesting grave here at Andersonville is. Turn down this road right here. There's a stone dove on top of Lewis Tuttle's grave. Grave number 12196. A lot of people who have read about Andersonville and did research always ask about this one. Why is the dove there? We don't know. The superintendent who was here at the time that the dove was discovered used to come back to this part of the cemetery because he liked the drink. And we suspect that's the reason, excuse me, that he stumbled onto it. He lived here on site, and Lewis was with the 32nd Maine. The closest monument to us is this, the monument for Maine. And when the Park Service took over the site in 1970, they did a sample piece of the stone off the dove and compared it to the base of the monument. And they were both quarried from the same quarry in Saco, Maine, which is where these boys were from. And why he was recognized and not his brother, who was down this aisle a little further, that's questionable. I've been contacted by descendants of these two guys, and they've been able to give me some information, but none of them have information about the dove. They don't know. They don't know why it's there. They don't know who put it there or exactly what it represents.
Is there anything else about this place that you think I should see or that you would like me to know that I didn't ask you about? You're the expert here.
That would take hours. Really. I don't know. It's a place where I think everybody should come if you can. Part of why I do what I do is to thank those that are here. So many within these walls died for our country. And then you've got thousands that are buried here that were servicemen and women. I find so often that there's graves here that have never been visited by family. I just want to make sure there's some sort of a record. It speaks to me just to keep the memory of those alive.
Well, Kevin Fry, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with me and showing me around. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
That's Kevin Fry, historian and former volunteer at Andersonville National Cemetery. You can find a link to his work at findagrave.com, as well as his contact information if you have questions about a service member buried there at gpb.org. Sea turtle season is well underway along the southeast coast, but researchers say many male turtles are disappearing worldwide. Could the same be happening in Georgia? GPB's Jillian Magtoto has more.
University of Georgia researchers have been tracking female loggerhead turtles for nearly two decades, and their numbers seem to have stabilized after the state listed them as endangered in 2006. But the picture for males is less obvious.
Large database of the females, but we just don't have good baseline data on the males at all.
That's UGA senior research scientist Brian Shamblin. He says the nests of many reptiles like sea turtles will hatch eggs of just one gender. That's because temperature determines gender. The warmer the sand or soil, the more likely that females will hatch. But as global warming heats up sand, this could be a problem. From Australia to Florida, studies have shown that 99% of hatchlings are female.
There basically are no male hatchlings being produced anymore. Otherwise, in a lot of areas, but we really don't know.
Beginning this year, Shamblin's team and the Georgia Department of Natural Resources will visit the state's barrier islands to count loggerhead males in Georgia, sampling male sperm trapped in the yolk of an egg from each nest.
So we're using those sperm DNA to figure out, you know, who all the dads are that are contributing to these nests.
A team from DNR began sampling 2 weeks ago on Osaba Island. That effort will extend along the coast to the Carolinas. For GPB News, I'm Jillian Magtoto in Savannah.
Civil rights attorney and speechwriter Clarence Jones, a close advisor to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and one of the key figures behind King's I Have a Dream speech, has died. Jones served as King's personal attorney and helped draft several major speeches. He also helped smuggle King's letter from Birmingham jail out of jail in Alabama. In 2024, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Joe Biden. He died Friday in California. Clarence Jones was 95 years old. In Georgia sports, former Atlanta Braves third baseman Bob Horner has died. The power hitter was the team's first draftee to skip the minor leagues and its first player to hit four homers in a game. Braves announced his death yesterday, saying he, quote, built a career out of being first. Bob Horner was 68 years old. The Spanish national soccer team has announced a cultural hub to mobilize its fans during the FIFA World Cup. Spain is scheduled to play two matches in Atlanta during soccer's biggest tournament in June. The team said last week that its downtown Casa de España, or House of Spain, will host giant screens, an official store, a trophy display, live music, food, and more. And Augusta's new professional hockey team will be known as the Augusta Lynx. The ECHL Hockey League unveiled the name and logo yesterday. It revives the name of a previous hockey franchise that played in Augusta for about 10 years, ending in 2008. The new Lynx will begin play in the 2027-2028 season. And that's a wrap on the podcast today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check gpb.org/news for updates to any of the stories you heard today, as well as news stories that our reporters have written. Subscribe to this podcast, and we will be there automatically in your podcast feed tomorrow afternoon. Your feedback and your story ideas are welcome, of course. Send a note to us by email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you again for listening. We will see you tomorrow.